You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And when a medical mistake causes you injury, you need to call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns! 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. It's Cleveland Browns Daily. It is driven by Liberty Ford. We're going to go to the phone lines. We'll also discuss some comments from Ray Farmer. We'll get into the mailbag as well. So a lot to talk about, a lot to get to here on CBD. Let's go to Phil in Brecksville right now. Phil, welcome to the show.
Nathan, Matt, you know, as much as I want to get excited about this game and the rest of the season, honestly, I feel like Roberto Duran when he throwed Sugar Ray Leonard.
No mas.
I've just had enough. You just can't go more of the same, you know, and I just find myself saying I don't want to look to the end of the season, but, you know, that's where I look. Look, you know, Josh McCown is what a journeyman quarterback is. He's going to show you great things, but Matt said it, you know, a couple weeks ago. We don't have that killer there, and it's just not going to happen. You know, our defense is just terrible, and everything is just they stay the course, and I'm just done with it. But we know that Ray Farmer is the walking dead. The question you have to ask yourself is, does anyone in Cleveland want Ray Farmer to do another draft? And I think we all know the answer. I think that Jimmy Haslam knows already what he's going to do. Ray's gone on day one. And I think if Mike Pettine doesn't stop apologizing for the players publicly, I'm sure that privately he holds them to task. But unless he publicly says it, he's lost me. And I don't know that he stays. If he does, I think that he can stay. And I think the Shiner, I don't know if he's in the circle with Jimmy Haslam or not. But Jimmy already knows what he's going to do. And I'm just tired of it. I'm not even mad anymore, guys.
Phil, thank you very much for the call, and certainly frustrated like many in the dog pound. Matt, I want to ask you this, though. You know, where he said Mike Pettine keeps making excuses in the press conferences, perhaps in, you know, private, he's chastising the players a little bit more. Is it a fine line for a coach to walk? How does it balance, you know, calling players out and then call them out in public?
Well, the head coach very rarely, even behind closed doors, has direct contact in front of a room and calls players out. That just doesn't happen. What happens is when they do sit around, you know, the big coach's table and they watch that film collectively, or he watches it with the offense and then, in fact, with the defense, comments will be made by the head coach to the coordinator and reiterated to, you know, to the linebacker coaches, to the DB coach, to the D-line coach, with specifics in regards to players. Like, and I'm not going to name it. Like, we can't win with that. If this guy does it again, get his you-know-what out. You know what I mean? Things that can be said. And then how the message is conveyed is in your individual meeting rooms. And then, for example, you know, the linebacker coach says, so-and-so, this is out of the cow's mouth. This is what he said. So I'm holding you accountable to X. And only in passing, because, you know, and that's, you know, the amount of time that you see the head football coach because of his obligations, and it's just the way it is, and it's not just anybody else. All his obligations with the media and everything that he's doing behind closed doors, his office being up here, the players being down there, he's not walking around the locker room. There's probably Pete Carroll might be the only guy that might walk through the locker room and feel comfortable. You see him on the field if you get, you know, I don't say you get stuck walking out with him, you know, especially when you're, you know, a 2-5 football team. Conversations are about good, bad, and indifferent, and you're kind of like, oh, yeah, well, I forgot my mouth guard. Got to go back to the locker room. You want to avoid, I mean, when you're losing, you want to avoid those situations because it's awkward. It's awkward for you as a player, even though your paychecks are coming. It's awkward for you as a head coach. And as many people think, you know, if in fact an individual like Mike Pettine or the head coach of a football team is the walking dead, you know, you don't know that as a player because you're under contract, as is the coach. But the message is conveyed through the position coaches. As, going back to my point yesterday, when I talk about that relationship and how you learn how to watch film and so on and so forth, you spend so much time with them. They are the guys that you have a deep relationship with that you can talk to man-to-man and get real with. You can't get real with the head coach because you see them and then you don't. You see them and then you don't.
And how would the locker room react? Were you ever on a team where the head coach in the media just called people out and just undressed them?
I'm trying to think of Mike. No, I haven't. You know what? Mike Singletary did, but he was a buffoon, you know?
Right.
In the words of the kid, you know what I mean?
Class A bozo.
Right, yeah, exactly. So he didn't just do it. No, because he thought the platform that he was on was as if it was the same as when he's a player.
Yeah.
And I think in some cases that's why Jim Tomasula, who was a position coach, gets called out for all his inadequacies as a head coach because he thinks it's all in the same.
Right.
He doesn't need to change the way he conducts himself. But no, Marty Schottenheimer did not. Norv Turner definitely didn't.
No way.
But
Norv would get after you privately, certainly on the field. Wasn't he pretty?
Offensively, yes.
On the offense,
yes. He wouldn't say a thing to the defense. You know what I mean? Because we're boring. He was over there having a conversation with Phillip Rivers about route combinations. He'd turn his back to the defensive side of practice. And then McCarthy, I would say, McCarthy is probably a very, very good balance of a player's coach and a disciplinarian.
Okay.
And in some cases, it's a lot of what, and again, I don't know this to be fact, a lot of what I could see Mike Pettine being in 5 years from now with, you know, in year seven as a head coach or having gone, you know, whatever, to where he's like, he's found the happy medium of appeasing his players, but holding them accountable and being a disciplinarian when need be. And I thought that was very interesting in my, you know, 6 months I spent with Mike McCarthy.
I want to ask you one question. A 3-4 defense, let's say you've got, you know, you've got your D-line, you got outside linebacker, you got inside linebacker, you have secondary. And sometimes is the secondary split up, like you have corner coaches and safety coaches?
I mean, they're usually together.
They're usually together. Okay.
Yep.
So let's call their four position group coaches on the defense.
Yep.
In a 3-4 defense, if let's say you had your coaches, you had an A+, an F, and let's call it two Bs. How would you allocate those to those positions? Like, what position would you feel that you needed to have the A+ at as a position coach in a 3-4 defense?
I would say you don't ever want to have an F. I'm not going to deviate an F. So say we'll say a C-. Okay.
Oh, you have one guy that okay.
Okay, yeah. one guy that's...
I just rank them 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay,
but let's
I would
say that there is a sizable gap between 1 and 2, and between 3 and 4.
I would say you would want the fourth would probably be the inside linebackers.
Okay.
The four.
Okay.
So the least valuable coach. I would say two, actually, and three would be the defensive line, and 1 and 2 would be the defensive backs coaches and the outside linebacker coaches.
Which one would be one?
DBs.
The DBs.
And the reason why I say that is because of what the league is now. Who gets paid the most money on the defensive side of the ball? People that can do what? A, cover, right? Elite corners, and B,
rush
sack the quarterback.
So you think, though, of the front seven, the outside linebacker coaches, where you should have your absolute best possible position coach on
yes,
the defense?
Yes, because if you have the right guys and they're coached properly,
that
they're a game changer.
Off.
They're a game changer. That is a position for me in every place that I've been that can change a game in a snap. You know what I mean? You have the guy that's a double-digit sack guy that was probably going to get double-teamed and chipped all day, but when you need it, he gets the pressure. He gets the hurry. He gets the sack. He gets the knockdown. You know, he blows in, you know, he blows his gap and gets the tackle for a loss when you need it. He does his job all the time, but when you need it, he performs. And I think in those two rooms are where you get it the most. And I think if you look around the league, that's where it's at.
The best 3-4.
When you need a sack, Jared Allen got you a sack in Kansas City. He got you a sack in Chicago. He's getting you a sack in Carolina now.
Justin Houston.
Tom
Bahali in Kansas
you know,
City.
Why the New York Giants are missing Jason Pierre-Paul.
Sure.
Situations like that.
You need that guy. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to take your phone calls and we'll sprinkle in some questions from the mailbag. It's Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.